Lucas on Life.
A very good evening to you. Welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. And tonight, I'd like to talk about friendship. Now, here's an image that you might recall from a popular TV show. Six people dancing around in a fountain in Central Park in New York City. Ring any bells? Yep, you've got it. Friends, the American TV sitcom, which aired on NBC from 1994 to 2004, 10 seasons, the show revolving around six friends in their 20s and 30s who live in Manhattan, New York in the USA. Friends was massively popular. It was nominated for 62 Primetime Emmy Awards and won the Outstanding Comedy Award in 2002. Perhaps you'll remember a couple of lines from the opening song. So no one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's a joke, you're broke, your love life's DOA. It's like you're always stuck in second gear. But when it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year, I'll be there for you when the rain starts to fall. Isn't it true that we all want that to be our experience when the weather of life, when the circumstances change and everything gets rainy, we want our friends to be near us? So tonight, let's talk about friendship, and I'd like to introduce you to a couple of my friends, if I may. Here's Casting Crowns with Scars in Heaven. Scars in Heaven from Casting Crowns. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas. It was one of those faintly ridiculous and mildly hilarious Christian gatherings that cheer me up no end. I was enjoying the service, not least because I had absolutely no responsibility for it. I spend my life as a Bible teacher waiting for the nod that signals that it's time for me to preach, which means that I can rarely just enjoy singing in worship. Rather, my mind is racing, thinking about what I'm about to say, and I'm invariably fiddling with my iPad, making last-minute adjustments before delivering the sermon. And then, when I'm the one bringing the sermon, there's a consistent arrangement that I have to live with because I always have to listen to me. I've listened to myself blethering on quite a few times over the years, and I'm occasionally tempted to tell myself to belt up, but that would really be quite odd now, wouldn't it? The worship leader was leading a rather lilting song, but he'd chosen the wrong key. I know this because all the men were trying to sing in a lower octave, but it was just too deep for most of us, which meant that there were moments in the song where we had to all go up into almost falsetto mode. The result was the sound of a notational symphony, maybe cacophony is more accurate, where the men alternated between gruff, off-key bass tones and high-pitched squealing. The worship song had at least 58 verses, maybe six, but 58's how it felt, and I was trying hard to not laugh out loud. But it was then that I heard a familiar voice behind me, a deep, resonant voice manfully belting out the lower bass line of the song. It was my friend Richard Foth. I decided to take a break from the shrieking and just listen to Foth. He has a nice voice. He's not going to fill any concert halls, but the man can sing. But as I tuned in to my friend, a realization dawned that sparked immediate gratitude because he has been a baseline in my life. Strong, solid, substantial. His friendship, together with that of his wife Ruth, has undergirded my faith and helped keep the rhythm going for quite some time. I first met him, 35 years ago, a new immigrant to America, I was feeling homesick and bewildered, not so much by the culture, but by the church where I served as an associate minister. Everything was different from church life in the UK. Suffering from suffocated homesickness, I wondered if it was time for my family and me to return to Blighty. And then I went off for a weekend men's retreat. I wasn't hopeful because the place was packed with chaps sporting massive beards who wore baseball caps, check flannel shirts, and generally made the place look like a lumberjack convention. I didn't have any flannel shorts. All hats tend to perch on my head in a peculiar way that looks rather awkward, and the last time I tried to grow a beard, I resembled a rabbit's rear end. booking homebound flights seemed like a very sensible thing to do. I felt quite out of place. Until the speaker for the weekend stood out, that is. It was Richard Foth. He had an endless supply of fascinating stories, and there was just something about him that thawed the spiritual chill that had crept into my soul and warmed my heart towards being in America again. I decided to stay. That was the last I'd seen of Dr. Foth until I was asked to speak at a Bible college in California, where he was then serving as president. As chapel speaker, it was my privilege to have dinner with him. And then, years later, he and his wife decided to relocate to Fort Collins, Colorado, and be part of Timberline Church, where I served until recently as a teaching pastor. And so, my bassline singing friend is a regular part of my life now. In fact, this morning, we had breakfast, and I told him about featuring his friendship during this program. In Gethsemane, Jesus agonized, knowing that the dawning of tomorrow would bring horrifying pain. There, he called upon the Father. But he was also hopeful that his faithful trio of Peter, James, and John would offer solid prayerful support. When facing trouble, nobody wants to sing solo. And so, thanks for singing the bass line, Dr. Foth. Keep that tune going, please, for many, many years to come. You're listening to Lucas on Life, and we're talking friendship. Bognor Regis. I know, despite its regal title, it's never going to make the top exotic locations in the world list. Any listeners who are residents or who love the place, please forgive me, but here's the truth. In Bognor, glorious white sand is in rather short supply. The beach instead is a mass of unyielding pebbles. Barefoot bathers wince as they pick their way across those stones. There's a broken pier, shattered by a series of devastating storms and fires. Once the home of a fabulous 1,400-seat theatre, long gone now, the pier is a sad short iron stump jutting out into the grey sea, the home of a tired amusement arcade with intermittent flashing neon lights and the smell of damp and seaweed heavy in the air. But for all of that, Bognor holds a special place in my heart. It was there that my brand new bride and I went to church the Sunday morning after our Saturday wedding. Discovering that we were newlyweds, the minister asked me to give a word of testimony about my most recent blessings. This being the morning after our wedding night, I blushed crimson red. Awkward. But as a young lad, I spent some marvellous summers messing around on Bognor's beach. Those were days when a 12-year-old was allowed to travel alone on a bus. My grandparents lived just a few miles from the coast, and I'd made friends with Ian, whose family made their home in Bognor. Every summer, I'd board the bus, just a few shillings in my pocket for the fare, and make my way to Ian's home, just 100 metres or so from the promenade. I was always given a warm welcome, even though I'd not seen my friend for a whole year. We spent long, wonderful days, tanned deep brown by the salty sun, our tired limbs restored by delicious suppers served by Ian's mum at the end of the afternoon. For a London boy, those days by the sea with my friend, they were just heavenly. Until it happened. It was the beginning of another long, lazy summer, or so I hoped. Excited and eager to begin another few weeks of fun, I leapt off the bus and ran towards the street where Ian lived. I turned the corner, and my dream summer turned to winter in an instant. Ian's house had disappeared, vanished into thin air. In fact, the whole street was gone. How could this be? Who stole a street? What had happened is that all houses had been demolished to make room for a new car park. As for Ian and his family, I had no idea where they'd gone, no way to make contact, and that was it. I never saw him again. Many decades later recently, I thought of Ian and my soul sank. I would love to know what happened to him, how life turned out, how delightful it would be to meet up, to remember those carefree days that we shared. And that got me thinking because I pondered friendships that I've enjoyed through the years and lamented that some that I thought would always be there are nowhere to be seen. Some close ties came undone due to conflict and misunderstanding, or the frame of friendship faded with others because our bond couldn't stretch across the geographical distance between us. And then function catalyzes friendship. When a season of working together ends, the friendships we made in that shared space sometimes ends too. I just thought that our friendship ties would endure once our season of working together were over. Perhaps I was unrealistic and should have known that relationships that are seasonal are no less meaningful. And then, of course, sometimes there's a sudden ending. Jesus knew that pain of disappearing friendship. Mark's gospel gives a stark indictment about his band of brothers. Then everyone deserted him and fled, Mark says. They vanished into thin air, gone. I've had a few of those. And I'm pretty sure that I've been less than a perfect friend myself. There were times when crisis hit others and I was not there for them. Other situations where I'm sure I spoke words that I regret and wish I could take back. As a friend, mine is far from a perfect record. So let's celebrate this. Friends make us better. We drink deep from joy's well when laughter is shared. A fabulous experience is so much better when we can turn to a friend and say, "Isn't this great?" So today, why not phone or email a friend? Because a true friend is a treasure and loneliness is punishing. Ironically, perhaps it took COVID-led social distancing to teach us the value of togetherness. And speaking of phone calls, there's one I'd especially welcome. Ian, by some very small chance, if you're listening to this, do me a huge favour. Go ahead. Give me a call. This is Lucas on Life. We're talking friendship. It was one of those "Is God speaking to me?" moments that those who follow Jesus experience. A thought surfaces in our minds, seemingly from nowhere, and the persistent luminosity of it makes us wonder if the Holy Spirit is broadcasting on our personal wavelength. Some believers insist that their lives are punctuated with daily, even hourly, revelations. I personally haven't found God to be quite so chatty, and I don't mean that in an irreverent sense. I'm just being honest. And so when I do sense his nudge, usually I dash into crisis mode. Is this thought that races around my mind just my wishful thinking? Is this truly the divine voice or merely the after effects of last night's chicken tikka masala? I often wish that God would speak with a louder, clearer voice, but perhaps he whispers because he wants us to draw closer so that we might hear. Anyway, back to my inner nudge. Halfway through a Sunday morning service, I was just about to preach when the thought surfaced again. Take a look at my beautiful people. And so I did. I turned and looked around at the sea of faces that was our congregation and recalled some of their stories. Over there was John, who married after desperately longing for a soulmate for decades, only to lose the darling of his life in a drunk driver-caused crash. Towards the back was Sally, who poured out her life on a lonely mission field. Not many responded to her life of kingdom service, but she stayed the course until retirement. But now she feels somewhat lost, surplus to requirements. I look her way, but she's unaware, for her eyes are shut tight, her hands lifted in worship. A beautiful sight indeed. And the whisper confirms the truth that God, the God who flings stars into being with a word, daubs drab skies with rainbows and paints deep-sea fishes in stunning colours that no human eye will ever see, this God of ours finds the greatest delight when he sees hearts that trust him through mystery. I want to share with you yet another dazzling sight, one of my closest friends. My friend Steve was given a terminal cancer diagnosis around 15 months ago when a tearful oncologist delivered the dreaded news, actually told he had just 5 months to live. The news was that there were hopeful possibilities with some radical treatment options, but Steve and his family had to tread a bewildering path. The possibility of a medical solution their belief in a miracle-working God who can heal in a moment, all entwined with a visit to a hospice to discuss end-of-life care. When life is threatened, life still goes on. So the weekend after the dark diagnosis, Steve, a brilliant evangelist who uses comedy in his tricks and laughs presentations, performed at 4 outreach events. His wife, Becca, continued to lead Restored, which is a non-profit dedicated to help victims of domestic abuse. During a transatlantic phone chat in that season, Becca spoke of some of the good things that they were celebrating even as they passed through the Valley of the Shadow. "There is so much beauty to be seen, even in this horrible season," she said. "We don't want to miss the lovely things that God is surely doing." That's when I had to pause for tears, because in celebrating treasure that can be found even in darkness, Becca and Steve themselves became quite beautiful in their persistent faith and faithfulness. In the intense and unwelcome roller coaster ride that suffering brought, they were clinging to God through the white-knuckle ride. They were and are, in short, a stunning sight. Often, we get focused on what's wrong with the world and with the church. We get fixated on the failures of high-profile Christian leaders. We sink into despair, preoccupied with the picky pettiness that breaks out when someone suggests moving the pews. We wonder if there's any future for a people so resistant to change. But all around us today, there are beautiful people, and perhaps friends are among them. If you're one of those beautiful people suffering bravely, know this: your love for Christ surely turns his head. He sees you. Just a couple of months ago, Steve and Becca flew out to Colorado for just 5 days to be with Kay and me for my retirement weekend from pastoral ministry. They flew back, got home from the airport, and the doctor called, telling him the news that there were no treatment options left and that the end would come soon. Just a couple of weeks ago, Steve passed into the presence of the Lord. I'll be speaking at his celebration of life just next week. The impact, the joy of his friendship continues. As I've shared about Steve and Becca, please pray for Becca and their lovely family, if you will. And if any of us find ourselves preoccupied with ugliness in ourselves, in others, in our broken world, and in the imperfect church, let's know this, that beauty can be found in the most surprising places. Let's look again. And next time we get around a dear and cherished friend, let's hug them extra tight, because great friends are priceless. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.